Hey guys, welcome back. Very happy to have Tavi Costa back with me. Very popular guest last time we had him on. A man of mining, gold, and the great reset understanding. I'd consider him a brother in arms in terms of where the world is. And it's been a lot has happened since we last spoke. Tavi. So first of all, welcome back. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me and looking forward to this conversation.
Delighted to have you back. And boy, didn't gold and silver suddenly move? You know, we were talking the similar talk, but there was a lot to be proven. We had a three-year consolidation since the 2021 highs. A lot of things have come. Tell us the big shoes that are dropping for you that you want to touch base on as you're going through, in your own words.
Well, I think it's sort of shocking even to me, who've been so bullish to gold, and to see the what's been priced in the curve for rate cuts, going from 7 cuts at 6 months ago to now, you know, less than 2, or precisely closer to 1. And at the same time, gold prices, you know, who would have thought gold prices would have had the move that it had? Who would have thought silver would be breaking out, you know, above 30 and now hanging at $29 an ounce? Those are levels that are really interesting from a technical perspective, but also historically speaking, because we've seen the sort of boxes checking in terms of the gold cycle by seeing gold breaking out from a what used to be a triple top, and now it's been record levels, you know, 2,300, 2,400. And then copper started to move. Now silver is in the process of moving as well. And then, you know, still we have the laggers, which is the miners, which to me is where the major opportunity really lies ahead. And so it is, you know, it's a lot of skeptics today in today's world. And that is not backed by history, meaning people saying that maybe this time is different. Maybe the metals are going to rise and magically miners are not going to make any money. That's not my view. But, you know, that's the world we're living in, and you know, narratives are always created out of nowhere, and that's one of them. And so, you know, I always say this. I mean, people can borrow your conviction, or I should say your thesis on gold, and your thesis in the miners, and your thesis in silver and other metals, but they will never be able to get the same level of conviction you do. And conviction is what makes money, because when you have those shakeout moments, which we're having one today as we record this, a lot of people lose their focus and think about short-term risk. And when the big opportunity is always in buying assets that are historically undervalued. Like when people say, you got to be a great negotiator, and when you, not really, let the market negotiate for you. Now, the fact that we can buy all these things so cheap is already being negotiated down for you. You know, it's historically depressed for a reason, because everybody hates it. And so take advantage of it.
Yes, you're absolutely right. It's positioning and knowing the times that you are in that actually makes you the money, and being the only one that sees it when so many don't. I find myself asking, even on the majors, Tavi, I mean, what's our biggest, would we say Newmont of the mines? What's the multiples that we're getting on the majors? I've got Newmont up. It's one of the biggest. There's Goldcorp as well, trading at about $40. What are the big guys getting as a current PE ratio generally? Because they don't even seem to be getting too much credit for the gold price.
Yeah, it's tough to look at PE ratios for some of those bigger mines. The mid cap is maybe a better way to look at, because their earnings are so depressed, and the fact that we're seeing the average grade for most of those mines deteriorating drastically. So what is interesting as a technical sort of analysis, not technical from a price perspective, but more technical in terms of the market itself, it is interesting that you have a premium being paid on copper mines, especially the larger ones. If you look at Freeport, BHP and others that have a large exposure to copper, you see a big premium being paid on those relative to the gold mines. And also you can see that the copper miners, relative to copper prices, are moving in a different trajectory than the gold miners relative to gold prices as well. So, you know, when we think about the fundamentals and the economics of both mines, they're a little bit different. You know, copper tends to have a bigger capex commitment. And they're usually bigger projects, and gold is slightly different. They're smaller projects, but from a perspective of bottom line, the difference is not that drastic. And usually they're facing the same challenges when it comes to cost. But because of the green revolution and green agenda, capital is flowing into copper mines relative to gold mines. And the pressure that we're seeing in the big companies is so large that they're being forced, look at Barrick, look at Newmont, being forced to shift away from gold and into copper themselves, which is creating, in my view, one of the best opportunities in the gold mine side, because not only we know the skepticism across investors, but now it's coming from the majors that are calling their assets non-core and selling them out, with the idea that copper will be more relevant than gold itself. And in a world where that we both agree that debt is just such a enormous issue globally speaking, and seeing what's been happening with Japan, or Europe, being forced to cut interest rates recently here, even though they're revising their inflation numbers higher. Now, why do we think this is happening? Well, this is happening because they're trapped. I mean, there's no way around this. And so if we think that that's not going to translate in hard assets going a lot higher, then how else would you create a thesis, a long-term thesis on this? Because it's as clear to me as it sounds. And so we have to kind of understand the vision, and forget about volatility in the short term and try to take advantage of these deals that are just so cheap. And so, I mean, that's where I've been spending more. I'm a macro junk guy. I spend most of my time looking at macro too. And still very involved with most of the macro decisions that happen at Crescat. But when I think about the real opportunity is that the big short opportunity today is the valuation of fiat currencies. And when you can find a business that is literally linked to the fundamentals linked to the upper movement of hard asset prices, now sign me up. I think that's where the game really is for the next 5 to 10 years.
100%. I mean, I couldn't have captured that better myself. And it's amazing. I find the analogy I would give you is copper having this boom. And of course, we had Soros then saying recently, it was about a month ago, the most obvious trade now is copper, and all of this and driving it in. And it's kind of like I call it like a neighborhood. And your neighbor's house has become super cool and getting a whole bunch of bidders. And instead of your house value going up, everybody's going, no one wants to bid on your house. We must have the house next door, And I think copper is like the sort of the cousin, the poor cousin of gold and silver, but definitely relation. And in fact, the whole category should go up. But it seems we all have to go blind and all chase the thing, the thing, the thing, whilst forgetting that the next thing is right standing next to you and nobody's paying any attention to it. And it's bizarre, isn't it?
Well, and it, wouldn't you die for a thesis where central banks are accumulating gold, 2, 3 years ago? I would. And now we have that, right? I mean, every central bank in the world has been pretty much accumulating gold recently. We've seen that in the data, and that's all disclosed data. Who knows what's happening undisclosedly? Because if you do the math of how much gold has gone up in prices, and it's not driven by Western vehicles like ETFs and other things, and even future markets, which are not positioned, on extreme long side by most non-commercial players, and commercial players, is to me a sign of how much undisclosed has been happening. This is the real thesis. And what people forget, I love your analogy of the neighborhood. What people forget a lot of times is that gold and copper mines are usually, a mine that is producing copper a lot of times actually have gold as well, and the other way around. And the same thing goes to other byproducts
Family.
of other copper mines like silver that you mentioned even before this interview get recorded. The economics of these businesses is improving drastically. And yes, the cost is also going to increase. That's a normal function of this. But understanding that in history, there are times you want to own mining businesses. And I cannot think of a better time than today. In the 70s, yes, costs increased too. Interest rates were going up a lot more. Imagine in a world that today interest rates just functionally cannot go a lot higher. Why? Because everything breaks. And so, you think the Fed is not going to take the card of unemployment rates and labor markets deteriorating anytime they need it to? Yes, they will. Of course they will, because they have to. They don't have an option. If they cut rates three times, it reduces the interest payment by almost one third. At what point do we see this shifting back to financial repression? We're probably not too far from it. Now, is it going to happen tomorrow? I have no idea, and probably not. But it will probably happen in the next years or so. And we as investors need to have that sort of wearing that hat, rather than so worry about short-term moves in markets, because that's really irrelevant at the end of the day.
100%. Get up to the top of the mountain instead of being in them amongst the forest and the trees, and see the major path, the key trend, and stick with it, because your day will come. You don't have to be accurate to the week with your predictions, or the even the month. Your day will come as sure as the sun comes up in the morning eventually. And I think that's very much from our preliminary discussion exactly what you're doing. And what's the upside when the awakening? I mean, how big is big for people that are in? Let's never mind listed entities. You also mentioned there's a lot going on in the unlisted space, and that most of that market is not appreciating and is still using $1,850 as play safe accounting, a sort of an accountant's rule of conservatism type thing. We've traded 2,400. We're base building now while we've had a spell of dollar strength. But surely that's way too conservative, and these models are underpricing these assets.
Well, the mining industry is so broken currently that when they're selling an asset, they have to make it attractive by basically setting gold or metal prices that are just completely unrealistic if you do any macro analysis, meaning unrealistic on the low side. It's basically assuming gold prices would be at 1800, not joking, by 2035. If you ask me, I think we can see triple number a triple of that price in that kind of time frame, if not more, right? I think I'm being conservative, to be quite honest, especially if central banks will have to be buying as much gold as we think they will, because they own 20% of the balance sheet today, and back in the 70s they used to own close to 74. And so, can we go to the world like that? Yeah, let's see. We just double from where it is right now and go to 40%, which is even below the historical average that they usually own. And so, in a world where discipline has to be reestablished at some point, which that really means enhancing the quality of international reserves by buying gold and transitioning away from treasuries and other sovereign institutions and sovereign debt in general. That world is a world where gold prices are not going to be 1800s. They're going to be a crazy numbers. And so I tend to say, because I don't know, nobody knows what the target price is 10 years from now, but I think we're going to see stupid prices. I think we're going to, who would have thought that Bitcoin would be trading at 60,000? And it might be a lot higher. Who knows 10 years from now? And so, $60,000 for Bitcoin. So what is gold worth? So, I think it's a lot more than what it is right now. And you start thinking about that way. What is silver worth? What is copper worth? I guess copper, everyone is talking about it. I love copper too, but I always get my some level of skepticism when even my neighbor is telling me about copper shortages. What is silver worth? What is zinc worth? Why do we have such a discount to buy a zinc mine? Who in the right minds think we're going to see a reshoring, green revolution, all these other trends that we're seeing, particularly the revamping of electrical grids and data centers being built in order to create artificial intelligence to become actually more deflationary at some point? We need to build things first. And how do we do all that without making the metals and mining industry at least more relevant than a margin error, which is it is what it is right now. It's less than zero, less than 1% of the global equity market. And a reminder for viewers, just the precious metals space alone, looking at gold, silver, platinum and so forth, and then the miners in that space used to be close to 30% of the global assets market. Now, I'm not saying we're going to go back to that world of 30%. Maybe we will. That's the upside. But let's just say we just double from here, to your answer, to your question
What
about,
is it today? Tell everybody what it is today.
oh, it's less than 1% right now,
That's the
and
key. That's the key. And what is Nvidia's market cap?
you know it. It's $3 trillion now, and
Yeah.
it's so. And you know
And how
what's the
the
irony, Francis? You know what's the irony is that the higher NVIDIA goes, the more GPUs is because it's, we would hope that that means that fundamentals are improving alongside, which means they might not be increasing to the same magnitude that prices are increasing, which is fine. That's why we see inflated multiples. But the higher NVIDIA goes, it means the higher the demand for GPUs is,
and
we would
chips.
think.
Yeah.
What does that mean about metals? What does that mean
Silver and
about
silica. Yeah.
energy product,
Silver.
energy, yeah, or energy electricity consumption?
That's why I say it does just look like the disproportionate. The other thing you said that was super interesting, ref mining industries, they're not applying the inflation and the upside on the gold price, but they are applying all the worst kinds of cost increases for the valuation of the mine in terms of future labor costs, energy trajectories as well. So on what it's almost asymmetric in that there's no upside for you on the product side, on the revenue side, and here's all these extra costs that are going to get much more expensive on the cost side. So it's a good business, almost telling you.
Or the other thing would be the discount rate itself, because the discount rate, if we think about it, it's you got cash flows in the following years, and then you're discounting that cash flow. Just let's just assume the discount rate is basically risk. How much risk are you paying to get that those cash flows in the future? And then you discount that for the present value. Well, if you think it that way, part of that discount rate, let's just assume it's we're using 10%, which is in majority of those mine deals that are being sold today, especially privately, are being sold with kind of a 8 to 10% discount rate. Well, if they're assuming inflation in the future, which is fine, they should, but they're not assuming inflation in the metal prices, which is not fine. I totally disagree with that. But that's, that's causing the price to be lower, better for me as a buyer. And then when they discount this thing, the higher the discount rate, the lower the present value, so the lower the price I pay. Why in the world are they adding inflation to the discount price as well on top of that? And that's great. That's, to me, if they're gonna, if they're not gonna assume inflation on the metal price, and then they're gonna assume inflation on the discount rate, hey, it's all better for the market is negotiating for you. So.
That's what I love. That's what I love. And you said it very aptly, and it's a great phrase. And it's kind of like the corollary of that is the debt markets, which I think is the worst possible investment. And I did an MBA. I think you're similarly qualified, probably a CFA and MBA or whatever. But you talking net present values, that's very accounting speak. But debt used to be the risk-free premium. And you had to do a business, you had to be above the hurdle rate of the rate on a 10-year treasury bond. Now, the thing that's missing is almost we need to remove the risk-free element to debt. There's quite a high probability of default, failure, or some form of sleight of hand failure, which is the inflation, the negative real returns for a very long time, assuming you don't get a big bust and a reset, and they say we can't pay. Or you've been converted into some other instrument in some reset sleight of hand, magician's sleeve, all of this stuff. And there's no risk premium being associated with a 30-year T-bill or a 10-year T-bill. And you, on the other hand, are talking about you're getting a risk premium reward of 10%, and then you're getting the inflationary, just to keep it real in real terms, discount on top of it. With a flat gold price at levels that are $400 plus below where it is now. I mean, it seems too good to be true. Part of that, when you see too good to be true, you go, What is it I'm not seeing? And the big thing I raised to you is government nationalization, almost like a world gets synchronized. They all say this is key asset, silver, da 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 da, because I'm putting the solar panels on everywhere I live. I want to be totally self-reliant. It costs a certain amount. South Africa isn't the only place that has sketchy power or people that want to exploit solar, et cetera, et cetera. This demand for silver, will they eventually could mines be nationalized, private and listed ones? Or could government lock in prices and do some form of Marxism where they say it's deemed such a critical metal, it's not a price discovery mechanism, silver can't sell for more than $30 an ounce, gold can't sell for more. That might not happen to gold, it's less industrial, but gold can't sell for more than 2,500. These things get locked and these businesses then have to work to a fixed supply contract and you just have price fixing. I mean, even in America, they had rental controls. In the communism era, they've done this. And we are very, very worryingly taking quite a Marxist turn globally, especially the West, it has to be said, culturally, fiscally, in terms of pet projects and bizarre, you know, news media outlet management. How's that for the Raycon? Do all these people that are selling so cheap, and I'm taking a long time to ask the question, is there something that we've got a plan for? And what's your plan for how you do that? How do we get around it?
Look, first of all, nationalization has been a risk, has been around for ages. And still we have True. Those numbers I said, about 30% of the gold space, including mines especially, of global assets, assume other periods that did see, you know, a wave of nationalization. The 1970s was a period that we did see that a lot. And I think that's highly likely because that's a function of higher prices. Usually you tend to see nationalization increase as well. Now, we're so far from that in my view, as far as you know, I think the frothiness needs to be created first. We are not in the frothy environment at all. And I would also point out that this is sort of unique to each project in each country. There are, you know, when a country takes that approach of going there, it's sort of a desperate approach. And so we got to understand the economics of their own economy as well prior to making those deals, and understanding the relationship between you and your project and those policymakers that are likely to make those types of changes. Another thing I would point out is everything has a price. Now, you know, if you ask me that you're going to buy a mine in Africa per se, and pay billions and billions of dollars for that mine or for that project itself, then I would say probably, yeah, you know, if you're making, you know, you're buying something for, let's call it 10 times free cash flow, and with the risk of nationalization, that's probably not priced into that asset. Now, if you're buying something that basically is being sold by, call it, you know, 50 million, and the mine is producing at these prices of gold, you know, $200-300 million every year, you know, it's basically paying itself, you know, in a year or two. So your risk now is really a timing problem, right? I mean, does it happen in 2 years? Does it never happen? There's a chance of that too, never happening. But maybe if it happened in 7 years from when you bought it, you already got your money back way ahead of that. So, you know, those are all things that I think need to be assume as you make those decisions of buying. When you buy a mine, most of the times you're making a commitment of, you know, 10, 15 years ahead of here, unless you're looking to resell it, which is another strategy that we're open for those things too. And so idea is buying something really, really cheap that is already overpricing that risk, not pricing any, you know, the terminal rate is basically, you know, 6 months when you're buying a mine for $40 million that is producing over $100 million, right? That's the terminal rate. Is basically you're saying this mine is going to go out of production in 6 months or so. Do you believe in that? I don't. So, well, then you know, when silver prices reach $150-200 an ounce, which I think it could be possible. Please don't quote me on this, but I think we could see gold and silver prices or copper at stupid levels because of the amount of leverage we have in the system. As we see those things happening, yes, then I'm gonna I'm going to try to sell those assets first of all. If I don't, I'm going to try to harvest that free cash flow the best way I can, because I do think the risk of nationalization is going to be drastically increased. Now, in the world where silver is still trading with a two handle, still is the case. I just can't imagine that that would be the case today. I think we're far from that, and the market is way overpricing these things. And our risk as investors is to diversify. Why put all your eggs on the one area? Put your eggs in the US, put your eggs in South America, put your eggs in Europe, put your eggs in Africa, put your eggs in Japan. Maybe a few places will get nationalized, who knows? But not all of them. And if you get one winner, you're done. That's really the play here. So to me, that's sort of the opportunity. I think in 6 months from 5 years from now, we're not going to see these opportunities. I think they're going to be priced much higher. I think the risk is going to be mispriced, and the fundamentals and the risk reward is going to be very different. Now, in today's environment, it's a given.
Yeah, it's true. And for those listening, by the way, Tavi is talking about some of the money down that not the full price necessarily is always paid. So those 50 million numbers with 200 returns, because there's also a case of there's got ready clients that are prepared to front end seek accreditation, isn't there, in terms of deal structuring as well, that say, hey, give us just let us be your exclusive buyer at any price, whatever the market price is. And so you actually can get funding in instances from businesses that are actually short the metals, even though the mines seem to be unloved. They've got ready buyers.
And that's what people don't understand, is that the market is short of metals. That's the truth. And the people that buy metals from mines, they need that ASAP, and they want to secure their logistics and inventory as well as possible. And so they are, that's the willingness of going above and beyond in order to secure inventory, which is an environment we just haven't seen. Like, the early 2000s wasn't this way. I mean, not at all. I mean, the depression of capital spending that we're seeing in this industry is something unique that maybe goes back to the 1970s. None of us have enough data to really know, but from what I've calculated and seen so far, it's the most similar environment for the mining industry, not for the macro, for the mining industry that I know of. And that's because we, during that period, also didn't see a lot of discoveries. That was a period where it was like a 10 years where discoveries didn't really happen. There was also skepticism in investing in mining. And then after gold prices had that run up that we had during the 1970s, it basically unleashed the 1980s and 1990s or so, one of the biggest periods of exploration that we've seen in the history of the mining industry. Now, some of the biggest mines were actually discovered during that period. Now, I think we're gonna get there. We're gonna see a discovery age as well. But first, first we're going through this battle of mining companies that are seeing their reserves fall off a cliff at the same time as the existing reserves themselves are deteriorating massively in quality because of the average grades are declining. About, call it one fourth of the mines in the world today of gold deposits are refractory. And for people that don't know, refractory is very non-economic, very difficult to mine. And so that's what the problem is. And so it's creating, setting the stage for people that want to create the next major companies to do that. And that's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, sounds positively exciting and great. And what else in terms of macro? Let's leave the mining side generally aside, particularly that of private mines. But what else in the macro? Do you think the majors, but well, before we leave mining entirely, have the majors forward sold too much? Is that why they're not also getting a lot of benefit to the, because they will be, the derivative desks, they will do some degree of cover. Do you have any view on how they've forward sold? Have they got this wrong themselves in terms of forecasting? And they're not getting the current price.
I think they've been, it is a function of lack of capital force those businesses to be ultra conservative, even in their estimates of their businesses themselves. And I think that, just do an exercise and look at the estimates for a technology business versus a mining company, and you will see drastic differences on, on aggressiveness of estimates, right? And that's just a function of attractiveness of capital. The more capital comes into an industry, it creates that froth, and that froth is usually reflected on estimates. And so, I think that's just a function of capital dried up completely in this industry. And the people, and you asked me the question about as well about what types of returns we can see. Look, usually we tend to see new billionaires being created in gold cycles. And so try to get in front of that, right? I mean, try to understand the history, how those billionaires became billionaires. How did Pierre Lassonde became Pierre Lassonde? How did Tom Kaplan became Tom Kaplan? And usually there's different paths you can take. Eric Sprott, how did Eric Sprott make so much money in the early 2000s all the way to the end of that full decade of the gold cycle? How did he do all that? And how can we replicate those strategies today, given all these imbalances that are creating these opportunities? And that's what fascinates me and gets me excited every day, because I think we are living in an environment of a wealth creation that we haven't seen in a long time, potential. And I think deploying capital smartly right now is one of the smartest things you can do. And so yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to, I think there's going to be plenty of successful people out there. I just don't know who. I know some of them that are likely to be, and they're all, try to be in front of that, and try to be, creating those types of partnerships that of those guys that will be succeeding in this cycle. Because I think it's inevitable, my opinion, that we're going to see one of the biggest and longest mining cycles in history. And the main reason for that is because the depression of capital spending is what create elongates the cycle itself. And we could see a 10, 15-year cycle in mining. Who knows?
And a technical analysis as a chartist absolutely supports that. The deeper the dip and the more prolonged and the more like the uranium was, as Rick Rule was pointing out, 5, 7 years ago, it's hated an industry, it becomes, so shall it be disproportionately loved on the rebound. In other words, there's nothing that really was loathed to come back into fashion really big. And the harder down, the faster up. It's got a natural geometry to it almost in essence. And yeah, that's I mean it's certainly super exciting. Silver versus gold and the outlook for silver versus gold. Do you have some comments on it? And are there any other precious metals that you think are partly interesting? I sometimes discuss platinum as well, a bit unique and a bit Russia, South Africa biased, but nonetheless.
Yeah, I mean, outside of gold and silver, the level of research out there in other metals is difficult. It's very uncovered metals, and I'm speaking more technically speaking about the mining space and so forth. And these are very uncovered markets, and therefore that is sort of a word for opportunity too. And I believe that we try to be cute looking at the volatility and saying, oh, copper has got more cyclicality than gold, and silver is the high beta version of gold. But the truth is, once gold starts moving, everything else follows in the metal world. And some will move more than others. And historically, what we know about history, at least, is that silver, especially at the ratio that it is currently, should be doing very well in a gold cycle. And so to me, it's a big bet. It's looking for leverage on silver, to me, is one of the most important things. The interesting thing in the metal world is that despite the fact that gold is making the big move recently, along with copper, but gold has been really leading the way. It's interesting to me that you still have, despite the fact that the metal is so high, there, like I said before, there's projects that mine gold that are still selling for nothing. And so that to me is also just as good as an opportunity as buying silver itself. And so, you can buy gold in the ground for pennies on the dollar. So that to me is also interesting. But I like zinc a lot. If I would answer that in a different way that I think most guests of your show would answer, I would say
Before you do
zinc.
that, can I stop you there?
Yeah.
Explain what zinc is used for so that everybody, as you go into your narrative, understands, because I even don't know or fully appreciate the value of zinc and how it's in everything we have.
It's almost as used as copper basically, and in the as a base metal for construction in a lot of things that we're gonna need for data centers, green revolution, and also the onshoring of building infrastructure for industries and all sorts of things. Zinc can also be used as a metal technology as well, which is now being under a lot of different advancements in that front too. And so zinc is one of the most industrial commodities you can look for. The key thing of zinc is that if you take an outlook of zinc over zinc prices over the last 100 years, zinc has actually been in this channel, right? And it's been in this big channel throughout 100 years of history. And it makes these massive bull cycles and then a massive bear cycle. And where we are today is that we're turning, in my opinion, we're turning at the very low end of that range, historically speaking. And do a research yourself and look at most of the metals relative to inflation, and you will see that most metals have not moved at all. And I'm not talking about CPI, I'm talking about used gold. Now look at zinc prices in gold terms. Look at, we all look at silver in gold terms, but look at all their other metals too. And you will find, things have not moved at all. And that's maybe a main reason why inflation is starting to happen now versus the last 20, 30 years. Inflation wasn't as drastic as we're seeing recently because metal prices have just not outperformed gold itself or true inflation. Now, that's not true throughout history. Throughout history, we do see periods where metals outperform inflation. And so I think we're entering an environment like that. And so when I think about all the uses of silver in the world today, I'm sorry, not silver, zinc, and I look at the price and I look at a mining project selling for nothing in the zinc world, that I think that's to me it's not only one of the most useful metals in the world, but it will also be in high demand. And I think prices, if we use more realistic prices of most of these mining projects being sold for nothing in zinc prices, you will see even better opportunities in other metals. And so I highly doubt that just the history, let's say lithium, right? Lithium is a bet on the battery technology. Is that, like I said, you buy in a mine in lithium or any other metal, you're making a commitment of 10, 15 years. Who knows if in 10 years or 7 years, the best technology for batteries is still using lithium. I don't know. I don't think anybody knows that. And now with lithium prices 80% lower, that bet changes the risk reward. Now I do know that zinc has been used in the economy for
Forever.
centuries and will likely be the case moving forward. I don't think that's going to change. It's not dependent on technology shifts. And so I think that that's a safe bet on the demand side, that although it's cyclical, knowing that in inflationary periods, commodities tend to do better than financial assets, I would think that zinc could be one of those leading metals on the upside. And so I'm speaking my book because we have a very large exposure
Of
to
course.
zinc as well. So I guess I like when people speak their book because that means they have capital behind it,
Confidence.
right? I mean,
Yeah,
so I
confidence
don't
in
know.
their opinions and have backed them with money.
I never understood that argument of like, wow, this guy's talking his book. That's great. He's got capital behind
I want to see you believe this. 100%, I agree with that. So zinc, the possibly the next copper, because copper started to get, sort of hype behind it. As I mentioned when we pre-chatted, I think it was our friend, the hedgie with George Soros. His name always skips me. I mentioned it earlier.
Druckenmiller.
Druckenmiller, who was starting to say the big play call is now copper. He will only come out after he's got his own position on, I'm sure. And we were calling on copper quite a long time ago. In our ETFs, the three ETFs people can buy that are all part of the inflation and the commodity bull market. And we gave a couple there. So zinc could be the next one possibly of that. What do you think could happen? Are there many zinc miners? Are there people watching this? How could they participate in your opinion without being in your, say, your fund? Let's say they just go buy a zinc equity that's listed. Who, where would you direct them? Which is well managed, low P's?
Yeah, some of the major companies may have exposure to zinc to a certain degree, but I think majority of the best mines are still private. And so
Private.
that's the difficulty of all this, of finding exposure. Now, somebody can still buy zinc prices themselves, and that's one way to play this if you're looking to do something less fancy and betting on the price itself. That's not a way to do it. Now, zinc being the next copper, I don't, I think that's an upside, and that's a great upside if it ever happens. But we don't even need that, right? I mean, if we just see the demand of zinc staying, meaning the function of zinc in the economy staying where it is, or which I would argue it's going to increase because of the needs. Like, I think that most importantly for investors is thinking about this infrastructure changes we're seeing globally, because I was shocked when I did the math myself. I was thinking about this as like, well, what is a true demand for metals in the future because of the infrastructure developments? Like, what we are likely to see because of the deglobalization trends forcing people to, reinvest capital into their own countries and trying to revamp their capabilities as a country. And then I looked at historically, I was like, maybe we can use history in the US. Let's just say the US for as an example here. When was the last time we've seen major infrastructure developments? Well, this was, we saw one in the 40s, the Highway Act. And the Highway Act, despite the fact that we still, most of the highways that we drive on in the US came from that act, came from that period of infrastructure development, is nothing relative to the numbers we're seeing today. And that is adjusting for inflation and also adjusting for GDP, because that's important. And then I looked at, I was like, well, here's an interesting data that is important. After World War II, countries went on, Marshall Plan and others, to rebuild the global economy. And so, we can calculate how much was used at that time. And I was looking at that number globally, not just in the US, to rebuild the global economy. And if you adjust those numbers to today's inflation and also relative to GDP of the US, not global GDP, you will find that today's spending is about three times what we saw back then. So I think what we're seeing in terms of infrastructure spending and changes in manufacturing spending and all that is probably something we haven't seen in over 100 years easily. So now, when we looked at the demand for materials back in the 70s and the demand for the 40s and the demand for 1910s, those three decades are the inflationary periods we had over the last 100 plus years. I think we're gonna dwarf those amounts. I mean, I think we're gonna see something even crazier. And then I looked at the spending of, that companies are doing to secure supply in the long term, and I know that they're not spending any money today. It's like, man, that might be the biggest demand supply mismatch we're probably gonna see in the history of commodities, or at least for the last 2 to 200 years or something. So now I'm not trying to sound, overhype the story, but that's, there's a famous phrase from Bill Gates, and I hate paraphrasing Bill Gates, but it is a smart sentence. He basically said, people tend to overestimate the short term and underestimate the long term. And that's such an eloquent, way of explaining what we have today. Yeah, people are now talking about copper like we're gonna see shortages tomorrow. But and maybe that might not happen tomorrow. We may see a price dip tomorrow. Who knows? Now, in 5 to 10 years, yeah, I think we're all underestimating what copper could do, even myself. And so I focus on those things because I think that that's where the real capital is there to be made, is in those long-term stories and not short-term metrics about markets. Although I pay attention to them, I think that that's re the real opportunities in those types of visions that you have for the future.
Yeah, so we basically in the most unique macro state that I've ever think we've ever come across, because we have a globalized, synchronized world that all seems to be in a debt-based paradigm that is very close to its mathematical terminal velocity, in an environment which sees clearly debt and fiat currencies chronically deflating purchasing power, which is the hyperstagflation essentially, in an environment where we probably need to re-grid the world for a new world system, which is going to be very technologically driven, I suspect, not to our great freedoms, I also suspect, but nonetheless, it's coming in some way or another. And we have the most punished industry go into absolute hated mode, brought to you by BlackRock, Larry Finkelstein, and the ESG agenda. And could we be looking at, gold, silver, zinc, as you've mentioned so eloquently here, they're going to mining, full stop. It's going to become like the great loathed uranium post Fukushima. Are we at that moment, only larger, probably? That's how it feels. And I don't want to also over egg and overhype the bull, but sometimes things just look, they just look right, don't they? From planets lining up.
Yeah, and by the way, the thesis is, despite the fact that it's been progressing and developing in the last 3 years or so, I've been more, I guess, openly talking about these things in the last 3 years and deploying capital into this as well. And by the way, the thesis has not been unleashed. And so, maybe there's another 3 years ahead of, of more of a consolidation and depression in the mining industry. I don't have the crystal ball for that, but I admire investors that are able to, in history, deploy capital in a bold way into a long-term thesis that they were foreseen. And I think it's much easier to plan for things in 5, 10 years ahead, especially 10 years, 15 years ahead, and being able to sustain that conviction with, despite the fact that the asset value of your investment hasn't changed, and being able to build even more of those assets and accumulate more of those cheap opportunities for, especially in the view of that capital allocator, is where I really take my hat off. I think people that really made a lot of money are able to act that way for years, and then as they establish almost an empire in this industry, or any other industry, they then take advantage of the favorable macro changes that they were foreseen at first, that then happens later on. And so, to me, that's really like, the monthly changes. I mean, I can't tell you how many times. And I'm sure you do too, get messages about what's going on with gold, today and all that. And I'm like, man, does that really matter? I can have an answer. I probably would come up with an answer for these things, but where you should be spending most of your focus and capital and attention is in that big picture. And that's I think this it's an ability that is very difficult to replicate. There's a reason there's a few billionaires, and hey, by the way, I'm not here to say I will be one. I'm here to try to replicate those guys and learn from them and try to and force myself into this industry the smartest way I can. But I could fail too, and that's part of the game. But I'm not here to I'm here with a lot of conviction and trying to act on something, like you said, it seems maybe obvious for some, and but for majority of folks, as it hasn't been obvious at all. Like, how do we see people or central banks shifting from treasuries to gold, and we don't see 60-40 portfolios completely shifting their allocation and becoming much more diversified, and maybe going from 0% allocation in gold to maybe 5, maybe 10, maybe 15? I think that's highly likely. And all these shifts of migration of capital into hard assets, we don't need much of that migration to revalue assets in a big way. And that's called asymmetry. And so I like those things.
Yeah, it sounds absolutely right. The point you hit on there on the 60-40 is bonds just aren't doing what they're supposed to do, and they're unlikely to replicate that balancing performance that they once played. The 40-year escalator has now probably become a 5 or 6 year elevator, and people are going to start realizing that. And one of the things they're going to grab for, whilst the whole metaverse is still being inflated, is going to be the physical things. It's got to be. And that allocation isn't there yet. It's not in individuals' portfolios. Banks aren't putting in it. It's because they don't make money off selling it. And that's the bias about it. It doesn't come with a sales commission and the first 20% off the top, creamed by some intermediating broker, because it's almost too true a price. You get your gold ounce, you pay for it. There's very small margins. It's not a milk it a product, is it? Tavi, this has been absolutely awesome. You made an amazing case for mining. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. Any parting thoughts you'd like to give our audience on how to do? I couldn't help think there was one word that was really, I was waiting to come out of your lips, that didn't have a chance, but will probably be in there somewhere. Patience, isn't it? Because it may not be next year. When you're playing the long game, it may not actually be next year. It could get slowed down. There could be a demand destroying event globally. There could be another thing. There could be time for a little bit of a world war. Who knows? But when you position with the macro and you really checked all your facts properly, the eventuality is always there, and sometimes it's just the holding on. And that's where many people give up. They are tomorrow, next week, or when do I become rich out of this? And I think maybe if you a passing comment on patience as well as your final thoughts.
Yeah, and I would say that patience is absolutely critical. And one important thing is a lot of people tend to focus on, a breakout of a price of a metal or something along those lines. But let's just say you've got that technical confirmation that for you gives you confidence to now deploy money into this. If you're just now trying to learn about this industry because of a technical breakout, you're lost because you're not going to have time to do it. I mean, I've been studying this industry for years, right? I mean, if anybody who has been here for a while, that person is probably going to have an edge on other folks. And this ability of understanding that market is going to become in high demand, in my view. And there's going to be other opportunities. I don't think mining is the only one. Let's just say emerging markets. People that understand the Brazilian market very well, or South Asia perhaps would be another one to look at, or South America overall. Those folks that have a very good understanding of those markets are probably going to be in high demand as well. And so, that's the way I think about this, because despite the fact that I look at technicals, I look at prices and all sorts of things, I think that the preparation comes before that price confirmation. And if you're not prepared enough when the timing is right, and we will know when the timing is right. Now, things are going to start moving in the right direction. Capital is going to start flowing in. Instead of two messages, now you're going to start getting, 200 messages from folks asking you questions about different things. And that's how things can start to change in an exponential way. And you start getting deals, and that's the world I want to be in 5 years. Not that I'm not now, but I want to be even more in 5 years, right? So that's the mindset and that I think most investors should be taking. And unfortunately, I won't be able to make a lot of investors be that way. And that's really the opportunity, is that a lot of people won't do that. And so, I am fairly young. I love my generation because they're so lazy. It's the best generation I could ask for to compete. And so they're so lazy that I don't have a lot of competition right now. So that's I feel like competing with a few people. And so it's
They're
great.
all asleep. They're all asleep, and the greatest opportunity is passing by.
Don't
Excellent,
you worry about
Tavi. Indeed, I've really enjoyed this. Hang on, I want to give you some details after, but Where do people that you would want to engage with you, how do they find follow you, or what would you like to give as your plug for people that have enjoyed our chat?
Twitter or LinkedIn are my social media places that I'm more, I guess active. Tavi Costa, at Tavi Costa is on Twitter, or you can also find just Tavi Costa on LinkedIn. You'll find me, and you can message me or engage there if you wanted to. And also, I write letters as well, research letters, macro research letters for Crescat. If you go to crescat.net, we have, the funds that we manage, but also all these types of research pieces that we write that are, tend to be, with the idea of writing about what we think it's going to happen, and that vision that I was referring to, and how do we put things together is sort of a good way to, if you're more interested in learning more, I think that that would be a good way to start.
Amazing. Awesome. Really enjoyed the chat. Goodbye, and thank you, and I look forward to when we get you back on again.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.